This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, May 28th, 2009. I'm Caleb Brown. The process has begun, digging through years of writings and opinions of Sonia Sotomayor as she attempts to become the next justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. Roger Pilon, Vice President for Legal Affairs at the Cato Institute, offers his thoughts.
She was a child of the Bronx. She grew up in relative poverty in the Bronx, raised by her mother after her father died when she was 9 years old. She did very well in high school, went to Princeton, graduated summa cum laude, then went to Yale Law School, wrote on the Yale Journal, was an assistant district attorney in New York under Robert Morgenthau. She was a commercial litigator. And then she was named to the federal bench by George Bush Sr. in something of a compromise that was reached when Daniel Moynihan recommended her in 1991 as a district court judge. Then she was nominated and confirmed by President Clinton to the Second Circuit. Interestingly, 29 senators voted against her in the elevation to the Second Circuit. So she was controversial by that time.
What is most striking about her writings as a judge and her work as an attorney?
She has refrained from taking positions where you'd think that she might take positions, and none more clearly than this Ricci v. DiStefano case that is before the Supreme Court right now. This is a case coming out of New Haven, Connecticut, whereby a test was given to firefighters who aspired to be officers, and the results did not come out right. In other words, they were such that the whites and one Latino scored well, and the African-American test takers did not. The plaintiff, lead plaintiff, is Frank Ricci, who suffers from dyslexia. He paid over $1,000 to have someone transfer the test material onto tape so that he could study. He studied long and hard and scored very well on the exam. After it was determined that the results of the exam were not politically correct, if I may put it that way, the city decided to throw them out, and they elevated no one to an officer corps. Mr. Ricci and others brought suit at the district court. The court summarily rejected the suit, and the Court of Appeals did the same with Judge Sotomayor on the panel. Unfortunately, they wrote no opinion, and in fact, it looks like they tried to bury the opinion because they published nothing. Only when the rest of the court, Second Circuit, sought to have the court, the decision reheard en banc by the full court, which was decided against 7-6, did we get a blistering opinion by Jose Cabranes on that court, bringing out all the facts, the failure to address the serious constitutional issues by the panel on which Judge Sotomayor sat, and the attempt to bury the decision by not publishing it. And so there were shenanigans in that case that have come to light. The conventional wisdom is that the Supreme Court is going to reverse it. And if it does, this opinion is going to come out just before the hearings are likely to be undertaken in the Senate for confirmation of Judge Sotomayor. So it will be embarrassing that she will be, if it is the case, overturned in that case. And that's likely to be a very, very important case for these hearings because it brings to the fore the issue of empathy, which the president has, of course, said so much about. And the question is, where was her empathy for Frank Ricci, who is a very sympathetic plaintiff in this case?
What of her jurisprudence on property rights? Richard Epstein wrote an article in Forbes recently arguing that one case that she had decided extended the reach beyond the very controversial Kelo decision.
Yes, that was a case that on the facts is absolutely shocking. The case is called Dyden or Dyden v. Village of Port Chester. It seems that the plaintiff is in that case, Mr. Dyden, wanted to build a pharmacy on land that he owned that was under redevelopment by Port Chester and under the control of one Greg Wasser. Dyden presented this plan to Mr. Wasser, and Wasser told him that he'd approve the project if Dyden paid him $800,000 or gave him a partnership interest. And the implicit or else was that he would refuse to approve the plan and ask the city to condemn the village and would put up a pharmacy himself. And that's exactly what happened. Unfortunately, this is another one of those cases where Judge Sotomayor saw nothing wrong and essentially, in a summary way, approved that. I mean, it was an egregious abuse of the Takings Clause, which provides that no property shall be taken except for public use and upon payment of just compensation. And so this is just one more example. There's another example, too, that came down just in January. It's a gun control case. And this is interesting politically because there may be opportunity here for the Republicans to exploit the concern of red state Democrats in the Senate who live in areas where guns are very important. The decision came down that the Second Amendment, now this was after the Heller decision, in which the Supreme Court found that the Second Amendment protects the individual's right to keep and bear arms. In this case, Judge Sotomayor and the panel she sat on held that the Second Amendment does not apply against the states. And so here is one more case that is likely to come up during the hearings.
The Ninth Circuit has already incorporated the Second Amendment.
That's correct. The Ninth Circuit has held that the Second Amendment does apply against the states. And interestingly, on the very day that President Obama nominated Judge Sotomayor, in Chicago, in the Seventh Circuit, a case was brought before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals raising just this question, namely whether the Second Amendment does apply against the states.
What does this nomination mean to a Republican Party that is, I think, widely agreed to be in remarkable disarray?
Well, this is an interesting opportunity, if they seize it, for the Republican Party, because they're having trouble right now making clear what it is that they stand for. This is going to be tough for them, however, because they've got a very sympathetic nominee, a person whose life story is very attractive. And, of course, she is a Latina, and that means that they are up against the problem of the Hispanic or Latino vote being largely Democratic these days. If they handle it carefully, they can stake out the positions that they stand for with respect to the Constitution, individual liberty, and limited government. Because she will not be on firm ground in these areas. And so it's up to them to do that. It's going to be difficult, though, not least because the numbers now on the Senate Judiciary Committee are 12-7. Never in recent memory has it been so unbalanced on that committee. So they're going to be having far fewer chances to bring their points out than the Democrats are going to have to answer them.
Roger Pallon is Vice President for Legal Affairs at the Cato Institute. You can read more of his work on the Supreme Court at cato.org.